Gloucester, giants in the heart of rugby country, ever present in the top flight of the English game, but incredibly, have never been crowned champions. Runners up, yeah, falling at the last hurdle, yeah, but champions, never. They have won some decent silverware though. In the latest episode of our Rugby Stories podcast series, we'll revisit 2005-2006, when Gloucester were finally able to convert their huge potential into a first European title, the Challenge Cup.
I think that season was figuring out our identity.
Simpson Daniel, who waltzes over.
My mindset was go, run, let's play, let's do tricks.
Spence, I was a bit nervous. He was now my head coach.
The whole season boiling down to these weekends.
That was the loudest I ever heard Kizo.
We had permission, if we thought it was on, to go.
He's left him behind, Simpson Daniel.
Some great moments in that game, some famous tries.
Forrester barging his way through.
I remember thinking at the time, what's not on there?
Puts the other one on.
How's the bounce? Oh, it's great! Drink in the adulation!
In Rugby Stories, you'll get the full, extended, uncut anecdotes from the players, coaches and key figures, some never told before. Gloucester's reputation as the team with plenty of talent, but without that final 1% that wins titles, can be traced back to the formation of the National League system in 1987. Runners-up in two of the first three seasons of what was then the Courage League Division 1, the toughest one to take was 1990, when a win at Nottingham on the last day of the season would have given Gloucester the title. But any slip-up would give Wasps the chance to leapfrog them into first.
Good afternoon from Beeston, home of the Nottingham club, whose job it is to try to prevent Gloucester from winning their first league title. Here's Gabriel on the break. Gabriel against Hamlin, it's there. Try given. It is looking bleak, to say the least, for Gloucester now. The final whistle goes. Nottingham have done it again. And there's the news that the Wasps team wanted. They have won the league title.
Yeah, I think it took us a bit of time to get over that, really.
That's James Forrester. He was only a boy for that league disappointment, but a Gloucester man for some painful near misses. The mercurial number 8 was a firm favourite in a cherry and white shirt. A one-club man with huge talent, Forrester's career was cut short by a horrible knee injury just when he was knocking on the door of the England squad. Despite that sad end, the man nicknamed Django, after a famous jazz musician, would give Gloucester fans a try that would rank among the great moments in the club's history. Before we get to the glory, though, first the tough times. Forrester remembers the struggle to change perception that Gloucester rugby were not a trophy-winning club.
Gloucester's just, I think, particularly a rugby town. You don't read much about football in the newspapers around here. People just live and breathe their rugby. Just huge history of it in the town. You know, some of the great names like Mike Burton and Mike Teague. Yeah, we were lucky enough following some great footsteps. And I think just walking around the town and around Tesco's very quickly comes clear how much it just means to people. When you win, you get some big pats on the back. And when you lose, you certainly hear about it as well.
From Django to Sinbad, Forrester wasn't the only talented tyro at King's Home during that time. James Simpson Daniel would spend his entire career at Gloucester. And what a career it was too. The flying back played 274 times for the club and was only a teenager when he burst into the first team squad.
So I first joined Gloucester, I was 17, playing for England under-18s at Sedbergh School. So it was quite a rugby school up in the north. I was quite fortunate to be playing pretty well in some of the trials, like the regional trials. And I think I remember after one trial, it was the Gloucester scout at the time just came up and spoke to me and said, look, you know, we'd love to have you down at Gloucester. You know, I remember coming down to the West Country, and if I'm totally honest with you, I didn't know what Gloucester was, the rugby club. You know, I was a northern lad. And I just remember going into the changing room, and then Phil Vickery comes walking over, and he's a player that I did know as a schoolboy. And I remember Vicks just coming over, and Vicks being Vicks, gave me a little bit of banter, and I was just like, wow, you know, I'm talking to an England international here, a bit of a legend of the game. And it was the feeling that I got of being welcomed warmly to the club, and the passion that those guys had, and the whole of the city had, to rugby. I just, you know, I loved every bit about it. And my first home game for Gloucester, I went on, you know, I remember getting a try, and just when I scored that try, running back to my starting position, the shed on my left-hand side were going absolutely wild as I jogged back. And I just remember thinking, wow, this is, you know, this is a special feeling. That's one of my still one of my favourite memories of Gloucester.
19-year-old Simpson Daniel made such an impact that he was trusted to start one of the biggest matches in Gloucester's history, the 2001 Heineken Cup semi-final against the mighty Leicester Tigers.
The first ever Heineken Cup European semi-final to be contested by two English teams.
I was obviously quite a young guy then, getting put into the Heineken Cup semi-final. Huge pressure, because I was so young, I almost didn't quite realise just how important the Heineken Cup was.
Excellent catch on the far side there by the youngster.
We actually had our chance to win.
Little scrum half, Gomesall wants it, but Leicester have stopped them.
But ultimately, you know, we lost out to some very experienced players.
And the whistle goes for the end of the match, and Leicester have won. Gloucester couldn't break that strong, strong Tigers defence in the end.
Simpson Daniel and his Gloucester side lost 19-15.
So it was ultimately about, right, can we win something? At the moment, we're hitting the crossbar.
And then in 03, I think we really built, 02, 03, we really built a fantastic squad. And I think the key, if you look at the successes of all the big teams, you know, over the last 20 years in the Premiership, it's probably that depth. And in 02, 03, we had proper depth. Like, we had quality, but we also had quality replacing quality when there was injuries. I think we almost had two full international front rows as an example. And we just had massive competition for places.
That squad looked unstoppable in 2002-2003, losing just five matches in all competitions. So of all the heartbreak and what-if moments in Gloucester's history, and there were a few, surely one of the hardest to take came at the end of that season. Gloucester were dominant in the regular league season, finishing 15 points clear of second place Wasps. They also won the Paragem Cup. So when Wasps and Gloucester faced each other in the playoff final at Twickenham, Forrester remembers his side were huge favourites to finally lift their first league title.
Sadly, 02-03, we came top of the pile by, I think, 15 points. Played some, yeah, brilliant rugby that year. It was, yeah, joy to be involved with. But yeah, it's one of those things you'll always grates on you a little bit. It's something you think about a fair amount. We just, yeah, fell short in that final. You know, as ever, we had a couple of injuries. Wasps were on a real amazing run of form. It's a bit of a strange concept. I don't think we played a semi. We went straight into the final. And Wasps had a big semi-final victory and were on a real run. And I think we had a 2-3 week gap of almost no games before the final. It's a bit strange how you sort of dealt with that period. Anyway, I'm getting all the excuses in, but yeah, we lost very comprehensively to Wasps that day, just totally outplayed us. Comfortably the better side on the day.
Gloucester's determination to avoid ending the season in bitter disappointment lasted just 2 minutes.
Gloucester were thrashed. It finished 39 points to 3.
Joe Worsley clean through, and Wasps are going to finish with a flourish.
I think the Wasps' performance, losing in the final, it's a one-off game. Really disappointing. We had a couple of those type of matches whereby we couldn't find our game for a final. If we'd have been given prizes for getting to finals or semis, then we'd have heaps. But the fact is, we always used to lose those big matches. You know, I'm still bitter about it now. I still feel that you should get something for finishing top, because that's what a league is. And then if you win the playoff as well, you get something else. But that's just my view.
Yeah, we had a young core of players, certainly in 2003. Yeah, Simpson, Daniel, Garvey, myself, you know, Andy Hazel. And, you know, I think what it was then about was learning from those experiences. And then you, as young players, becoming more senior, having more of a voice in that group, and hopefully then taking your team on to the next level.
One player came into the side in 2005 from West Country rivals Bath, who would certainly help to take Gloucester to that next level.
Gloucester have added 8 new names to their ranks over the summer, but there's only one supporters are talking about.
Mike Tindall, the Lord, 75-cap World Cup winner with Royal Connections. The centre was brought in to bring that winning feeling to Gloucester.
Tindall, I think, obviously, awesome signing for us. World Cup winner, best defensive back, you know, in the world, probably. But I think was the sort of glue that held that back line together. We had some seriously talented boys in that back line, but very young, very inexperienced, loved to take risk, which was a lot of fun to play with. But obviously, so much about top level rugby is about managing risk, and I think Tins was fantastic for the likes of Ryan Lamb, Anthony Allen, Ollie Morgan. You know, mentored them, gave us direction in the way we played. So I think, yeah, great signing for us, Tins.
And this is Tindall on the charge, weaving, curving, scoring.
Gloucester fans, I think, very knowledgeable, loving towards their club, passionate, intense, intimidating is what I'd always use. And, you know, having played against both of them, both for them and against them, you know, it brings its own set of challenges. But, you know, when they're on your side and you're playing in the cherry and white, it is like a 16th man. You know, we were very fortunate through a certain period of my time at Gloucester that it was a bit of a fortress there, and they played their role within that. But then on the other side of it, when I was playing against Gloucester, it was always to try and silence the Shed. And if you could do that, you knew you were playing well and you were on top. Obviously, going from Bath to Gloucester is quite a big switch at that time still. It had been done before, but it's not something that's normally done crossing the West Country divides. It was a strange, because I signed with Nigel Melville as coach. Then obviously Nigel Melville in that period went and Dean Ryan took over, and I wasn't sure how that was going to go because myself and Dean had had some previous history on the pitch. I managed to get him yellow carded as he was trying to knock my head off. And then Gareth Archer always told me that he hated me ever since then, so I was a bit nervous. He was now my head coach.
If a man can make Mike Tindall nervous, then you know he has a fearsome reputation. Dean Ryan was promoted from assistant to director of rugby at Gloucester when Nigel Melville left in 2005. But Tindall, James Forrester and James Simpson Daniel found out that one of the game's toughest players had an innate ability to coach attacking rugby.
Dean was obviously known as a player as being, you know, pretty nasty. And what I mean by that is he was hard. Talk to any of the guys that played against him. He played it physical, and that was the way he played the game. That was his main strength. You also heard that occasionally he could probably take it from physical to, you know, feisty, so to speak. So when I heard that we'd signed him, I thought, oh no, you know, Dean Ryan's coming. You know, I've got this image in my head of a bit of a thug type guy. You know, it's all about driving lineouts and all this stuff. And anyway, when he turned up, I couldn't have been more wrong if I tried. Yes, he was a hard man. He did have that firm edge to him, but actually his rugby ability was absolutely immense.
Great coach, probably best coach I work with. Yeah, Dean and I had, I think, a good relationship. Sometimes we had our run-ins, and that's probably largely the way I played. Took some risks, and I was probably a fairly difficult character to coach. But he taught me a huge amount, very detailed, very passionate. I think he really pushed the boundaries in terms of some of the stuff he did around our culture. Yeah, I think he's a real innovator.
We tried to play a very wide, expansive movement game. It's a fitness battle, and it's wearing someone down. So we switched to a sort of wide, expansive thing called three pod, which relied on the forwards not actually working around the corner, but everyone working together and playing their sections of the field. Wasn't something that people had seen before. That was the sort of evolution of that style of play, and it worked perfectly for the players we had in our team.
Being a little bit of a rebuilding phase, I think there was a lot of excitement around the place with some of the young talent that had come through in that era, in that little period. So again, the likes of Ryan Lamb, Antti Allen, Ollie Morgan, James Bailey. So we're aware we had, you know, a lot of talent at our disposal. Again, it was about, can they perform at the very top level?
We were one of the first teams to actually play to where our strength and our players were, and that was, we had mobile players, and so we wanted to play a mobile game that suited them.
Well, this is Ollie Morgan, Richards, James Simpson Daniel. That's what Gloucester do.
He was absolutely, without doubt, the best rugby coach we had here.
With Dean Ryan in charge, Mike Tindall's experience and a number of exciting young stars, Gloucester had all the pieces in place for the start of the 2005-2006 season. And the European Challenge Cup, although a second-tier competition, was one of the big targets. Considering the power of the French packs of Bayonne and Toulon, topping Pool 3 with 6 wins from 6 and a massive points difference was a huge statement. Tindall and Forrester felt it sent a message to Gloucester's rivals that this was a team on the rise.
Certainly at the start of that year, we would have said we need to be winning the Challenge Cup this year. You know, again, it was an opportunity to blood some really high-quality talent, but we would have definitely been saying at the start of that year, we need to be winning this, pushing on for bigger and better things.
3 games in already, 200 points plus scored, Gloucester bouncing. And now for Toulon.
We had Toulon, Bucharesti, and maybe Bayonne, I think we had. And this was before Toulon was quite the superpower that it is today. I think we absolutely smashed them home and away. So I believe we scored a lot of points in our group.
Ludovic Mercier, classy, A big striding Alex Brown. Ball to Morgan. Gloucester purring.
You can only beat what's in front of you, right? And I think we were winning those games very comprehensively.
Gloucester would take that form into the knockout stages, where they'd be at home against another French side and former Heineken Cup champions Brive. So, what do the players remember from that emphatic 46-13 quarter-final win at Kingsholm?
Did I play? I don't remember.
I don't, if I'm honest.
It's so funny as you sort of just move on so quickly and it just becomes another game.
I don't remember a huge amount. French teams, you know, didn't travel brilliantly in those days. Again, we just talked about concentrating on what we could do well, focusing on our performance and building for the latter stages. So for us, I think going to those games wasn't just necessary about just getting over the line, because we felt we were probably quite strong favourites at home, but really focusing on the performance element.
If the quarter-final wouldn't live long in the memory, the semi-final certainly would. Local rivals Worcester, a place in the final, and bragging rights were at stake. Forrester knew that now it was getting serious.
At home at Kingsholm, we expected to win and we wanted to go and win the tournament. So I think it was, yeah, big jobs to do. We've got to go and win this thing.
We had to play against Worcester, who were our local rivals in the semi-final. So again, that was a challenge in itself, playing against a local rival.
We always knew that was going to be very tough. So in context, I think Worcester fairly recently been promoted. Obviously, big derby game for us, half an hour up the road. A lot of the Worcester boys lived in Cheltenham and we were good mates, then we'd have coffees and stuff. But I think in many ways that makes you want to win even more. Could be wrong, but I don't think we've ever lost to them at that point. I think we're still sort of unbeaten against them in that sort of professional era. So I think our mindset was we wanted to keep that run going as long as possible. But we knew how tough it would be. They're proper competitors and no derby is ever easy. They always raise their game for these derby games. So great competitors in that team, yeah, led by Pat Sanderson.
Drawing another home club or, you know, premiership club in a semi-final, it can be helpful. Obviously, you know exactly what you're getting. You're not in for any surprises.
We knew it was going to be a proper ding-dong.
Richards, off he goes to Ryan Lamb.
And he made the break.
Off Lamb goes, looking to his right.
He jumped in.
And he's got Richards there again. He has Simpson Daniel, who waltzes over.
He started pretty well. Lamb, he made a break up the short side and set Sinbad up. Ante Allen scored quite an early try with one of his sort of characteristic line breaks, running off 10.
It's opening up here for Anthony Allen, all on his own.
A try from Simpson Daniel and Anthony Allen, and Gloucester looked in charge, 15-3 up at Kingsholm after 25 minutes. But Forrester knew that a derby match wouldn't be settled that early.
They came back at us. I think Shane Drahm maybe scored a try just off a scrum, hard line off a scrum.
Shane Drahm, close, there!
And then, no, it's, you know, it's game on, it got very tight. You feel those nerves in those tight derby games, it's a semi-final.
And this is Worcester in full flight, and this is Pat Sanderson, who has a bit to say.
Very nervy. I think everyone felt the pressure. I think both teams probably started playing a bit within themselves.
Powell to Drahm, drop goal. Nice.
At that point, it's just all about winning.
7 minutes left. Gloucester were 23-21 down and heading out. Then Gloucester teenager Ryan Lamb took charge.
I remember the decisive moment, Lamy crossfield kick to Mark Foster.
For Mark Foster, and Foster for Gloucester.
Mark Foster's try, created by Lamb, a Lamb conversion and a penalty from the same man with a minute to go, 31-23, and Gloucester were there.
The whistle, the applause, and the finalists, Gloucester.
Classic derby game, lots of nerves, lots of tension, very close. Score going back and forth, but I think, yeah, we just snuck it at the end. So bragging rights in the Cheltenham coffee shops for another year. So it was a big relief to all of us.
Yeah, once you get to that point of a tournament, it's points being prizes. We were good enough to go out and win there anyway, but you have to be able to switch that mindset into the winning at all costs sort of thing and not just being able to play wide.
We managed to just get the job done on that day. And again, it was more relief after that because you haven't done it yet. You know, all you've done is won another semi. It's irrelevant if you don't win the final. So I think the feeling that we had was huge excitement, but all it was a stepping stone to what the final aim was to try and win the cup, you know, to win the competition.
next week it was Wasps in the Premiership. Obviously there was going to be nervous tension there.
7 days later, and a decisive game in the Premiership, a spot in the playoffs up for grabs, and a winner-takes-all match against Wasps, who were going for a fourth successive Premiership title. A win would see Wasps leapfrogging Gloucester. They'd been here before against Lawrence Dallaglio's men, the side who destroyed them in the 2003 playoff final, and the team who a younger Forrester watched beat them to the title in 1990.
At home, yeah, we had to win to give us a fourth place spot. And I think a lot was on the line because, you know, if Wasps won, they would take that fourth spot.
The concluding game of the regular season, then a whole season boiling down to these weekends, a place in the playoffs up for grabs.
The atmosphere, I think that was the loudest I ever heard King's Home. It was unbelievable. Literally, the ground was shaking.
I remember exactly the mindset. It's another one-off game. It's another cup final for us.
Wasps the champions to kick us off, hoping this isn't their last match of the season.
We beat Wasps, we'd get into the playoffs. We can then win the league.
A great start. And another teenager making an impact for Gloucester, Anthony Allen, after 9 minutes.
On to Allen. Oh, he's through!
He'd just turned 18. He'd literally done his A-levels. Just looked like he'd been playing Premiership rugby for 15 years.
Wasps came powering back.
Now Joe Worsley, all muscle and determination to Van Gisbergen, stepping, twinkle toes, over the line.
We were losing.
20 points to 8, Gloucester 12 down at halftime. Dean Ryan's message to his young backs, go out and play. And play they did.
What about this Gloucester backline, full of youth and pace?
Some obviously great moments in that game, some famous tries.
Lamb. Oh, that's clever. Who's onto it? It's Allen again.
Dean Ryan was right. We can run it from relatively deep if it's on. Don't be scared of doing that. We got pretty much told off if we got it wrong occasionally, but he didn't want us to lack the ambition of being able to have a go from deep.
Got to keep your eyes open, and here goes Ryan Lamb, the little adventurer. How about this? Morgan. Oh, he's shrugged off Saki, and Simpson Daniel accelerating, the threat increasing. Back to Hayden Thomas. Wasps in desperate defence, desperate retreat. Lamb again, who started it. Oh, and he's going to finish it. That's incredible.
He came up with different ideas of how he wanted us to play, and, you know, it was also play without fear. And if you wanted to go and have a run from deep, do it, back each other. And that was why you end up getting the group of players that he picked. If you wanted a load of safe players, he'd have put in, you know, 15 Mike Tindalls. But he didn't. He wanted to get that balance in the game of the big ball carriers to the speed and the awareness. And again, you know, look at James Forrester. That's perfect for his type of game. You know, a fast, loose game. But in order to play fast and loose, you've got to be quick at getting the ball back and recycling to keep possession alive.
Remarkably, Gloucester had scored 17 points in 6 minutes. But the best was yet to come.
And here they go again.
We had permission, if we thought it was on, to go.
Simpson Daniel, what's on his mind? Dallaglio's in front of him. He's turning Dallaglio this way and that. He's left him behind. Simpson Daniel, Bailey to his right-hand side. Bailey and Saki. Oh, it's the try of the season. If ever a score deserves to be 7 points, Ryan Lamb makes sure it is. And all this, remember, after Wasps led by a dozen at halftime.
Managed to get back into the game by scoring about 20-odd unanswered points, so we're winning by a couple of scores.
They had a great score that day, but a 13-point lead at home, we would have expected to go and finish the job off, really. And
Mark Van Gisbergen's penalty for Wasps made the score 32-23 to Gloucester. The playoffs were close, but with 12 minutes to go, Wasps began to show their championship pedigree.
This is Saki, and Paul Saki has gone.
And then rather than knowing how to close the game out and see it off, you know, really going for the jugular, so to speak, we then weren't quite experienced enough in how to win, so they came back into it.
They were a great, great team. They never knew when to lie down, and a couple of late tries. I remember Joe Worsley making a late line break and scoring under post.
And Voice and Wasps are flying again, and Voice finds Worsley.
I think we blew it, as I said, a 12-13 point lead, and at home that's not really good enough. That's not what your top teams, you know, your Leicesters, your Leicesters with Martin Johnson leading, probably that doesn't happen to them.
Oh, this Wasps team, but pushed to the outer limits by a Gloucester team full of so much promise and potential. Wasps knowing how to get the job done.
37-32. Gloucester's Premiership title challenge was over.
As a senior group, you know, because by that stage, the likes of myself and Sinbad and Tins were very much, you know, senior players, and Andy Hazel, you do have to have a look at yourself and think, right, why is this happening? Why are we not finishing the job here?
Massive disappointment after that game. Massive, because we're at King's Home. We'd started poorly. We were excellent for a middle chunk of the game, getting back in front. And then that winning edge that we didn't know how to do yet, that's what Wasps did in spades. We hadn't learned that skill. We hadn't learned how to win matches, cup finals yet. We genuinely felt we had a good enough side. And we showed glimpses of that beautiful rugby that we could play and that defensive resilience that you need. But ultimately, we didn't make the playoffs.
It is hard to pick yourself up emotionally, but we were ambitious that year. We felt we had a really talented squad and we wanted something to show from the season.
You know, the sort of tag of never quite getting there, it stung a little bit, because I think, you know, realistically we expected to get into the playoffs in our heart of hearts. The good thing was, is it wasn't the end, because we had another game to play for and we had to just put heart, soul, passion, everything that we had into this one game.
And a fortnight later, Mike Tindall and co. would get the chance to put it all on one game. The European Challenge Cup final at Twickenham Stoop. London Irish were the opponents, with the brilliant fullback Dylan Armitage, the pinpoint kicking of Barry Everett, the power of the Irish pack, and that very, very lively and vocal fan base.
You always knew that when Gloucester and Irish played, the crowd was going to be amazing, because it's combined both sides, so it's generally capacity.
The atmosphere of that week, the training, the intensity of that week, you know, how much everyone in the 2 weeks leading up to it wanted to play well to make sure they got a selection for that game. We had something to prove to ourselves, because we thought we were a quality team that was going in the right direction. So we had lots of things to prove to ourselves. Dean was very good at challenging us emotionally, and I thought we got sort of all that side right going into that game.
We always knew when we were playing Irish, it's going to be a very tough game. Good players, they had, yeah, great set piece, strong scrum. Bob Casey and Nick Kennedy running their lineups are probably the best lineup in the league. Some really exciting back three players. Barry Everett, a fly half that could pit them in the right areas of the field, kick pens and drop goals from anywhere. So, yeah, they had a lot of threat. It's going to be a real challenge.
London Irish started well.
London Irish quickly into lethal mode.
It went 6-0 up.
You'll be up late waiting for Barry Everett to miss one of those.
Then Mike Tindall's quick thinking got Gloucester in front.
Playing the advantage.
Ball squirted out the side. I picked it up and put a grubber through, and Fozzie got on the end of it.
Tindall, Foster chasing against Ojo. Foster or the ball, it's Foster.
We needed that to sort of really settle the nerves.
And then I think one of those really pleasing ones, we'd worked on a sort of shift drive from a driving line out all week, I think, something with the way they defended. So I think we won the ball with Alex Brown in the middle.
Brown hoisted highest, now the surge, now the rumble.
Shifted up the short side. It was one of those sort of training ground routines we'd practiced all week, and it actually came off, which never really happens.
Andy Hazel and his blue hat.
That was a nice feeling. I remember Hazy's reaction to that try just said it all, what it meant to him. He was ecstatic, really.
Gloucester leading with a try each from Mark Foster and Andy Hazel. But Irish came back at them through Dylan Armitage.
Barry Everett, that's gone high. It's going to come down with a question mark.
Off a penalty advantage, they worked their way back into it with a great crossfield kick.
Thirlby struggling.
Great take by Delon.
Now this is Armitage, Dylan Armitage. How about this? Oh, yes.
It started raining quite heavily. They really went back to basics. A lot of pick and goes, a lot of mauling. Their lineouts ran very well.
If I remember it being one of those games that was very much flip-flopped throughout the match. You know, it was, there was no one side that looked like they were going to dominate the whole match.
I think be giving Irish a bit of a disservice if I said we were more up for it, because, you know, you look back at the clips and that was a very tense game. They're very up for it.
And Barry Everett, a drop for goal. Straight and true.
Gloucester 18-13 ahead at half time, and moments after the restart, they stretched that lead.
We came out the blocks in the second half. Sinbad got that interception, probably haunts Bob Casey's dreams, trying to throw one over the top, and it just bounced. It was lucky that his actual pass was so well, like perfectly balanced, that he got it, so it was point dropping first. So it just popped straight up, which allowed Sinbad, he didn't even slow down. He hit it at full pace on a half volley, and then obviously no one's catching him.
I remember it literally as if I was on the pitch now. I was kind of standing quite wide and deep because I was expecting a crossfield kick. And I remember thinking, OK, well, if they do that, I need to be prepared. I think they threw quite a loopy pass over the top.
Casey.
And thankfully, I managed to pick up the line between the two attackers that wanted it, and it popped up to my arms. And, you know, from 50 metres, me running forwards at speed, getting a turnover like that was, you know, it was never anything but a try.
Oh, no! A sprinting, intercepting, smiling, scoring Simpson Daniel.
So, you know, delighted to have got that, because it's a final. You want to contribute if you can.
And you sort of think at that stage that it's in the bag for us.
With just 10 minutes left, Gloucester were 31-19 up. But they've been in these positions before.
A big, wet pile of bodies and a ball somewhere.
But then their forwards sort of came to the party.
Nigel Whitehouse calls the advantage.
We gave away too many penalties, too many stupid penalties that didn't need to be done. We also had sort of some heroic defensive work where we held them up over the line, I think, two or three times. And then finally they scored one.
Nearly there, nearly there. Look at Nigel Whitehouse on his knees, on his elbows. Now the raised arm. Try, Irish.
We had lost some big games over the last few years, and I think absolutely a bit of us was feeling like the game was starting to move away from us, and Irish were in the ascendancy. They were playing a very low-risk game, something that really suited them. The weather had obviously turned, and it was very wet, so you'd be stupid if you weren't a little bit worried at that stage. Yeah, but obviously all we can think about is, right, how do we get ourselves back in this game? What do we need to focus on?
And then, yeah, with like 4 minutes to play, they got a penalty, went for a corner. We stopped that one. We stopped to drive, then gave away another penalty that they went into the corner, and then the hooker scored off the back of the driving line out. I always remember that looking in as a 13, when you're looking to see who you're defending and there's no one there. There was Celesi out on the wing, and then there was no one in between because all 14 players were literally hitting, just pick and go, trying to get this driving ball over the line.
Over they go! Yes, he can!
Scores level at 31 all. Waves of London Irish forwards, and Barry Evatt with a conversion attempt to win the match for Irish. He'd not missed a kick all game. Simpson Daniel felt that familiar sinking feeling.
Those thin lines between, you know, winning and losing those matches are very fine. Yes, there was doubt, and on the pitch you do feel, goodness, you know, could it go this way again? Barry had got the late kick in the second half, would have lost.
Oh, I find that hard to believe. He's missed it.
He was 100% Barry Everett till then, I think. Luckily for us, that was the first kick he missed. And it allowed us to draw the game rather than lose the game. Because I think there was only a minute and a half left on the clock. Final whistle goes, and you're into a huddle. And it's sort of, right, restart, reset. We've got to pick ourselves up and get on with it.
Just remember, very nervy, and it did feel like momentum had really shifted, and it really was with Irish. And I remember Dean, and we were all talking. And in that extra time period, we had a little 5 minute break. We were all trying to galvanise everyone and talk it up. But I think probably there's a little bit of a sense of, oof, momentum's with them a little bit, and you know, with the weather and the way they were playing, pretty worrying times.
And it got more worrying in extra time. Irish took the lead.
The whistle, the penalty.
We went straight down with a penalty. Everett kicked that.
And Irish ahead.
34-31. Gloucester feeling another trophy was slipping away. Time for James Forrester to show some magic. The kind that can win a final.
They scored that penalty. And then they kicked off. We set up a box kick. Rico, Pete Richards, puts a little dink over the top that Sinbad picks up on the... Again, amazingly well. Steps inside. Then Anthony Allen gets the ball.
and made a break up the midfield.
And I remember us going the same way. Django went round the corner, continuing the same direction. I remember thinking at the time, what's not on there?
And then Django did a ridiculous piece of skill.
He put it on the toe.
Forrester!
He picks it up, and I'm pretty sure Django isn't left-footed, but he sticks it on his left foot. It's a perfect rubber kick it into space behind.
Barging his way through!
Because Anthony Allen's gone through, that fullback has come up and he's actually in that ruck, so there's no one in the backfield. So whether Django knew that or whether it was just pure luck, which knowing Django, it was probably pure luck.
I don't know if it was fluke or skill. I can't remember if I necessarily noticed a lot of space in the backfield, but just sort of felt that there was space there and kick it again, try and get the weighting right.
And again!
He stuck it on his left boot and it's gone through. And then to make it even better, his second kick forward was also with his left foot. So not only has he done one sweet little nudge with his left, he then puts the other one on.
How's the bounce? Oh, it's great! Drink in the adulation!
And then only memory really is Mark Foster trying to nick the try off me, and he sort of started trying to overtake me and got down, but I was pretty determined and got there just before the dead ball line, and obviously referee had a look at it because it was so close to the dead ball line, but luckily gave it. Other memories, awful celebration, which you always regret retrospectively.
He executed it incredibly and he scores, and that's the thing about cup final rugby. You need moments of magic sometimes to help you through. And that's what Django's was, it really was. No one would envisage going around the corner, the number eight, doing a chip through, scoring himself, that he had the confidence in himself and his game at that moment in the game, which was obviously everything you were doing then was crucial and important to pull it off, and he absolutely nailed it.
Very emotional. It felt like momentum had shifted towards Irish, so I think just massive relief.
That's put us up by two, and then we brought Ludo on to make these kicks in extra time.
This conversion then for a four-point cushion. No.
Forrester's wonder try put Gloucester 36-34 ahead. But Ludo Mercier's misconversion meant Irish were still only one score from a win themselves. And they set up the chance to do just that.
Do you remember Gary Powell, who's a big character? I think he'd been on the bench and came on. And I think he gave a real silly penalty away around the halfway line. And obviously by that stage, I'd scored my try. And if they'd got that penalty, they'd have won. It was only a two-point ball game. So I do remember telling him I was going to kill him if it went over. He went white. I just remember all the colour drained out of his face.
And it was Barry Everett once again to win the final for London Irish.
Barry Everett, kick of the season.
That's when I thought it's going to happen again. I think that's when I was aware that we could lose it. That split second, you think, please no, can't go over. And that's when it does come into your mind and think, no, we're going to be absolutely sucker punched here in the most devastating fashion late in the game.
How about it? Dean Ryan, can't watch.
Those moments you do need probably a little bit of luck, the bounce of the ball for my try, and Barry, who's an outstanding goal kicker, missing a couple, so do need a little bit of luck on those days.
He pulled it left.
He's missing, he's missed it. Gloucester are still alive.
Our desire to keep fighting in that extra time period when maybe momentum has swung against us, I think, really showed the character of a really young team. And very good moment when that final whistle went. I think you could really see the relief in all of us.
Confirmation, Challenge Cup champions, Gloucester and silverware reunited.
36-34, Challenge Cup champions, extra time, seven tries and a wonder try to win it. Gloucester had found a way to win when it really, really mattered. The Nearly Men had finally got it over the line.
It was a great memory. I think, it was the first time I've seen Dean Ryan smile, actually, so it was probably one of the best things about it. These are the guys that you train, you fight and die for, so you don't die, but you fight and tooth and nail for week in, week out. You train with, you have honest conversations with, because you're trying to make each other better.
I went to bed with a cup that night, so I got a call from team manager panicking that the European shield had gone missing. I was looking after it that night, probably because I went home first. I was just knackered, but some great celebrations.
Sport can give you so many hard moments or low moments that if you've got a sniff of a high one, you've got to make the most of it and you've got to enjoy it. Because what's the point? What's the point in playing the sport if you're not going to enjoy those?
This wasn't just celebrated as a 30-man squad. This was celebrated as a city, and it was. You know, these victories, we didn't have loads, so when you get them, you've got to celebrate them. So it was never a doubt that it was going to be shared and celebrated along with the supporters. You know, we were so grateful for all their support. And I remember the final, and I still remember when I got my intercept and I heard the crowd go up. You know, I heard them erupt then. And again, those are the things, they're the goosebump moments that you don't get without them.
Your 35 best mates going and achieving something. Something that people can never take away from you.